podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host. This is Duff, or Chris. I'm the guest announcer this week. When you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast here, come visit me at team.2.com or duffrunner.blogspot.com, where you can follow me and six of my really good teammates as we train for our second, third, or fourth marathons. So, wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today, because I know I'm probably going to get my run in too. You ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run.
Well, I believe in the soul, the small of a woman's back, the hanging curveball, high fiber, good scotch, that the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter. I believe in the sweet spot, softcore pornography, opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days. Good night.
Hello and welcome to episode 88 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. Got a great show for you today. How's the audio sound? A little better? I picked up a new headset. I get an alert from buy.com every morning, and I saw a $85 headset go by for $29, and I was all over it. Score! So you should get yourself on that alert, especially with the holidays coming around. I also bought a new desktop, a dual-core HP Pavilion, for like $370. Score! Double score! So I'm planning on building out a little man cave in the basement, and this should positively impact the audio quality of the podcast. And today, we're going to talk with Dave Dunham, local elite runner and mountain runner, and marathoner, and all sorts of other stuff. He's a great guy. He got himself into runner's world over the summer. You might have seen him by running in every town in Massachusetts. And he's a great runner and a great guy. And I think you'll really enjoy it. I'm also going to give you a few equipment tip type things and do a longer instructive piece in the quick tip on track workouts, specifically for marathon training. I'm also going to include a speech I recorded as a practice run for a humorous speech contest I was doing in one of my Toastmaster clubs. And if you don't know what Toastmasters is, it's a public speaking club where you can go and learn specific tactical skills of public speaking. And it's pretty much dirt cheap. It's one of the best deals you'll ever find. You know, you can go visit a couple clubs, find one that's right for you, and it's really worthwhile. And, you know, I would consider myself a fairly competent public speaker, but Toastmasters allows me to practice stuff that's out of my comfort zone, like this humorous speech you'll hear. And by the way, I came in third out of eight, so I still have a lot to learn. Big thanks to Duff Runner for the intro. And I've met some great people this week. Iron Man Bobby, who wants to pick me up at the airport in D.C. for the Marine Corps Marathon and drive me around so he can interview me. Isn't that cool? And I don't know why anybody would want to interview me, but that, I guess, is not the question. And there are a whole bunch of us going down to the Marine Corps Marathon. And hopefully, I'll get to see some folks and take some pictures and meet some new people. Another online friend, Richard, offered to pick me up and have me stay over at his house. And I would have taken him up on it, too, but I had already booked my hotel online with Priceline, so I couldn't cancel it. So, but, I mean, it just shows you. I met so many people this week. I made podcast friends in Puerto Rico, France, Mexico. That's just this week. And so if you're out there, send me a note. You know, hook up with me on Twitter, hook up with me on Facebook, CYKT Russell, I'd like to meet you, and send in some audio. You get the dial-in number at the end of the show. Dial in and send us some audio. It's cool. I love people speaking in foreign languages. I'm not selling anything, so don't worry. I won't send you spam. Actually, later in the show, I'm going to share with you the numbers as far as how many people are downloading this podcast and stuff, because I thought it was interesting. And like I said, I'm not selling anything, so I don't see why you shouldn't know. Or, you know, I'm not hiding it from the competition. Maybe you'll find it interesting. I do. Blows me away how many of us there are out there around the world and how much we have in common. So, yeah, I've had a good week. Got my headset, got my new computer. I got a signed copy of John Kalos' book, Iron Ambition. Work's going well, and I actually look like a prescient being because I didn't freak out when things weren't going well in Q1 and Q2, so now I look good. The only thing I'm waiting on this week still is my bamboo underwear that I won from Sax Appeal on Twitter and my new cool running hat. So if you're running right now, or even if you're not, I'm sending out good karma your way. So straighten up, take a nice deep breath, in through the mouth, out through the nose, and smile. On with the show.
And now for something completely different.
Humans are imperfect beings. And marriages are unions of imperfect beings. I know this because I've been married for 25 years. I know what you're thinking. How can someone as young and good-looking and vibrant as myself be married for 25 years? Well, it just goes to show you that clearly, if that's not what you were thinking, I have imperfections of my own that I have to deal with. But I'm going to talk to you today about one of the key aspects of marriage, what we do in bed. That's right, I'm going to talk to you about sleeping. Now, this is you folks with some experience in cohabitation. I may see some nods of response from you in this. And you folks who may not have that experience, you youngsters, as it were, may derive some key learnings from this. You know, in my house, after we have dinner and the kids do their homework, typically it's my wife who's the first one who goes up to bed. She goes upstairs to go to bed. And she turns on the TV and she gets comfortable. And it's before I go to bed. So when I follow her up, I come up there, I find her laying in bed. And she's all snuggled up with her head up on the pillows with the TV on and the channel changer in her hand. Unfortunately, she's sound asleep, dead to the world. So, my wife tells me that she doesn't snore. So, she's laying there, she has her eyes closed, and she's making that noise which is not snoring. And at this point, I'd like to go to sleep, but I have to turn off the TV. And even though she's sound asleep, making that noise that is not snoring, she has the channel changer clutched in a death grip. Now, any attempt to take that channel changer away from her, she'll wake up like a shell-shocked veteran and say, What? I was watching that! So, I've learned just to either turn the TV off at its source or surreptitiously press the power button on the channel changer in her hands and pretend nothing happened. Maybe it was a power outage. In a worst case, I can just throw the pillow over my head and go to sleep because I'm a business traveler, so I know how to sleep sitting up in a chair with the lights on, with a baby screaming and somebody kicking me in the back of the head. It's not a problem for me. Humans are imperfect beings. You know, last night, I made the great mistake of asking her to set the alarm clock while she was in this groggy state, and that's always a mistake. You know, how many times has this happened to you? The alarm goes off. You get up. You let the dog out. You make some coffee. You have a little hot cereal. You go and you take a shower. You get dressed. At some point in this sequence, you look at your watch, and it's 3 a.m. So you say, honey, you must have screwed up the alarm clock. It's 3 a.m. And she says, I didn't screw up the alarm clock. It must have been you. So there's some aliens in this world that visit our bedrooms and change the alarm clocks just as practical jokes on us, evidently. Humans are imperfect beings. And this leads to the fact that no two human beings have the same internal thermostat. They have different heating and cooling properties. And when I come to bed at night, my wife has already achieved that toastiness. She's already snuggled up and warm. Now, I, on the other hand, she's a warm-blooded creature. I, on the other hand, am a reptile. I have a resting pulse of 35 beats per minute, and the blood does not even get to some parts of my body, most notably my hands and my feet. Now, if you live within, let's say, 30 miles of my house, You may have heard my wife scream at night. Yes, as I slide into bed, cuddle up, and lay those size 12 ice logs right up against her warm body, I draw heat from her like some sort of energy-sucking ice monster, some sort of alien. I'm an imperfect being. And when the weather turns cold, this time of year, I bundle up for bed. I put on a sweatshirt. I put on sweatpants. I dress in layers. I dress as if I'm going on a polar expedition. And why? Because I know at some point during the night, I will wake up without any covers. She will roll herself into a tight little cocoon with all the bedclothes, and I will be left shivering on the slab. At first, I used to try to fight back. I used to clutch a corner of the bed sheet and try to hold on to that during the night as she rolled herself up into a cocoon. But what I'd find is I'd wake up with this bedsheet all twined, wrapped around my head and neck like I was preparing to tie it to the bedpost and make an escape out the window. So it's easier just to dress warmly and accept the imperfections. Because humans are imperfect beings, and marriages are unions of imperfect beings. But these are the imperfections that we... These are the imperfections that we learn to cherish. These imperfections are the stuff. They are the meat. They are the marrow of a relationship.
This underwear feels kind of sexy. Don't make me queer, right? Right.
And now for the equipment check.
Go ahead, go swim. We got time. Look at that frog sitting right there. He's laughing at you. He's not even moving. Go ahead, go swim. It's going to be your last chance. We're going to be knee-deep in slush here in a few weeks. So, yeah, we're down the pond. The sun has set, and it is 6:30, and the sun has gone behind the hill. And the swamp maples are turning their bright oranges and yellows and reds. Very pretty. Not a ripple in the pond surface, except for the ones that the HMS Border Collie is making. And going for a nice little jog with my boy. There he goes. He's a great dog. So, good week. Been running a lot. I did like 16 and a half on Sunday. Really awful sort of long run. Just didn't have a lot of energy. Had a lot of shuffle. Did it on the rail trail, but I got it done. I think this weekend I'm going to run. Well, I know I'm going to run the first leg of a relay race on Saturday. But I think I'm just going to turn around and run it back and make it into a long run. So I don't really want to spend all day up there. It runs around Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire at 65 miles. And I've done it like, I don't know, 7 times. But, you know, I just don't want to spend all day up there. I've been out of the house too much. My wife is going to kill me. So I'll drive up in the morning, run the first leg, run it back. It should be about 22 miles. It'll take me about 3 hours. And I'll stretch out and drive home. Take the Camry out, put the cruise control on. I'll make Buddy mad that I don't take him with me. And then there's a race on Saturday, a 5K in my town, which I'm kind of scared about. You know, I think it's only $20. I should go run it, at least sign up, but that was pretty good. He just leapt off a rock into the water. He's a brave little dog. I hate to run a race in my hometown, a 5K, and do poorly because I ran 22 miles the day before. I'd rather win. Or, you know, win for me. I'll never win a race, but... So, equipment check for you. I got a couple of tips for you. Yeah, you're supposed to breathe. Don't breathe the water. No. Down the wrong pipe there, dude. Yeah. So, so later I'm going to talk to you about some track workouts. But right now I want to talk to you about my last bicycle tip. If you have a bicycle, you have to buy the stuff called degreaser, which takes the grease off the chain and all the working parts so you can lube them up again. And you get a brush and you just sort of brush off the everything that has grease on it. And on a bike, almost everything has grease on it. So there's this stuff you have to buy. It's called degreaser. Now, you can get it at the bike shop and you get a little can for like $10. You can go to your favorite, you know, Sears or whatever and get this stuff called Simple Green, which does the same thing. And that'll cost you maybe $10 for a gallon. And there's this other stuff, if you look around in the auto parts stores, there's this other stuff that's just like Simple Green, except it's something purple. It's, instead of being green, it's purple. And it's like $8 for a gallon, which will last you for 3 years. And that works just as well as any other stuff. So that's my last bike cleaning tip for you of the season. But I got a tip for you on that as well, which is don't get it on your hands. Because I did my bike up, I got my wheels back from my road bike from Anthony finally, and I put them on, and I was cleaning up the sprocket and the wheels, and I got this stuff all over my hand, my left hand, and I actually degreased my hand. I lost a layer of skin off my hand because I let it sit on there too long before rinsing it off, and actually my hand peeled the next day. It was rather uncomfortable. It was sort of a nasty thing to do. I basically degreased my hand. So that's awful. Don't do that. All right? That's your equipment check for today. Hey, dog, you ready to go? He's found a rock out in the pond. So he's standing on the rock, and the rock is like 2 inches below the water surface. So it looks like he's standing on the water, right, out in the pond. Very majestic, dog. Very majestic. You ready to go? Come on. Ah! Well, shake on me.
And now for our featured interview.
Hey, ready to go?
All right, so we're live. Live as we get, anyhow. So what have you been up to?
Just coming back now from a stress fracture. I spent a ton of time in the water, running up to 3 hours a day in the water. And now I'm 3 weeks into running on the land again and starting to get my legs back under me.
So how does it work, running in the pool?
I typically go outside to do it. It's very slow going. I use an aqua jogger, and I was fortunate this time around. I had a couple of injured teammates who joined me, and it helped pass the time.
So do you go to, like, a pond or something? And
yep, Stiles Pond in Boxford. It's very popular for triathletes doing their swimming, and we're trying to make it popular for aqua jogging now.
So how deep do you go? You, like, up to your neck or up to your chest or...
Well, it has to be deep enough so that you're not touching bottom.
Okay.
And then you basically do a running form, except you're not, you know, you're floating and you're not touching bottom.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a good workout.
And it helps keep your, I mean, what's the fitness fallout from that to actual running, the weight bearing?
Well, obviously you're not using any of the weight bearing muscles, and because you're not carrying your body weight, it's not quite as aerobic. But we made up for that with volume, you know, doing a lot of time in the water.
Yeah, that's cool. That's interesting because I've never done that. So, and I see people doing it sometimes at the pool.
Mm-hmm.
But so anyhow, sorry, I went down a rat hole right off the bat there.
No, that's cool.
So Dave Dunham is a famous regional runner here. He's famous for all his regional runners up here in the East. You've been on the USA Mountain Running Team, and I think you actually did the Olympic qualifier in the marathon, right?
Yeah, I qualified a couple times, Yep.
Got a couple of good times here. Dave, most of the local races, Dave has won at some point or another. I know the race that I'm a race director of, the Groton Road Race, David permanently holds the course record seal.
Yeah, you got to love those retired courses.
Yep, hasn't run the new course yet. We'll see you this year. You'll definitely blow up that James Joyce race and come up to my race.
Yeah.
But I called you because I opened up my runner's world. I guess, what was it, July?
Yeah, July or August, one of those.
July or August, I opened my for this Dave Dunham, smiling back at me. And what you had done is, let me, go ahead, you tell us, what did you do to get into runner's world, and then after that, tell me how do you interface with runner's world, because we were talking about that before.
Yeah, well, it's kind of unusual. I ran in every city and town, all 351 cities and towns in Massachusetts. And, Yeah, I decided that would be an interesting thing to do. I did a little bit of research and couldn't find anyone who claimed to have done that. So I'm very much into numbers and stats and things. And when I was preparing for my 100,000th mile, I went through my training logs and tried to determine, you know, where I had run my most mileage and things like that. And I came up with that I had already run in a little over a half of all the towns in Massachusetts. So I figured that'd be a neat goal to try and run in all of them.
So what were the rules?
Well, fortunately, it was my game, so I got to make up the rules. For me, I don't count a run unless I go at least 3 miles. So it had to be a 3-mile run, but it didn't have to be 3 miles in any given town. So I'd do a lot of planning where I'd be near a town line and maybe get two or three towns at once, sometimes even four towns all at once, by just putting, sure, you know, one step in each town during a four-mile run, a three-mile run.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a lot of planning going behind that, you know, a lot of maps, using maps and things like that. I'm really interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah, and there's some interesting towns in Massachusetts because it's an older state. There's some towns, aren't there some towns that are entirely underwater nowadays?
Yeah, there are towns
out by the Coabin?
That is true, and I did run in one of those ghost towns called Dana, and all that remains are a bunch of cellar holes, and they actually still maintain the town green there. They mow it. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, I think they come back and they have like a reunion of all the ex-residents every year. What we're talking about is when they put in the Coabin Reservoir, they put up a big dam, and it basically subsumed, I don't know, 5-10 towns.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved all the people out, moved all the graveyards out, moved everything out. So and then if you get out into Western Mass, there's some really hard to get to towns as well, right?
Sure. I had different kinds of maps. I had the a gazetteer, and I had regular road maps, and I also had a biking map, and then I used Google directions. And especially in Western Mass, I'd end up on you know, some dirt roads that really weren't made for general traffic, and even some gated roads that aren't open at certain times of the year. So navigation was definitely part of the whole game that I was playing, you know, figuring out how to get everywhere.
Yeah, it was sort of like an orienteering exercise, huh?
Definitely.
Yeah, because, you know, again, Massachusetts is pretty old, so our towns are chopped up pretty small. Mm-hmm. And everybody thinks of Massachusetts as like Boston and, you know, 128, but there's this whole other two-thirds of Massachusetts, like New Jersey and New York, that's just the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. So tell me, how'd you get hooked up into Runner's World?
Well, my plan was to write. I've been writing stories as I went about each of the towns I visited. I documented, you know, where I parked, where I ran, what I saw, things like that, because you know, eventually it would all blend, and I can't remember, you know, what town I was in on what day and what I saw or what I did. You know, in writing the stories, I figured maybe there'd be someone interested in what I had written, and, you know, worst case, I'd have it written for myself for my blog. I have a, you know, I do a blog, and I'm not sure exactly how Runner's World came about.
Well, I've seen quotes from you in there before, I think, something to do with Mount Washington.
Yeah, there are some connections. There are definitely some connections I have. I know Bart Yasso.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Yeah, exactly. And there was someone else, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head, that I knew who had connections with Runner's World. And yeah, I had written up a little bio about myself and like a two sentence introduction. And then one paragraph about what I had done, and sent it to a bunch of different magazines, Outside Magazine, New England Runner, Runner's World, and saw who would come back. And Runner's World seemed interested.
Oh, so the old query letter.
Mm-hmm.
The query letter.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. So you rose above all the thousands of starving young writers in the world. You got yourself hooked in through the traditional method.
There you go.
That's great. Well, you looked, then they had to send a photographer out?
Yeah, that was probably the most difficult part of the whole thing. About 3 hours in the rain, just running up and down near a town line sign, them taking pictures.
Oh, that's funny. So we were talking before, you're still doing the Mount series, right?
That's like true.
That's your, sort of your hometown race at this point. And
sure.
Mount Washington has always been your hometown race.
Exactly.
So how did, we were talking before, how did that go this year?
It went pretty well. I finished third overall in the series, and I was first master. Found out afterwards that the last two races I was running on a stress fracture. My foot had been pretty sore towards the end of it, and I knew I was in trouble. But I made it through the last race, and that was it. I was done for the rest of the summer.
So have you had a lot of injuries through your career?
797.
You are a numbers guy, and we might footnote that David works for the IRS. So the 797 injuries and for the stress fracture, I mean, you've been down this road before. No pun intended. What do you think caused it? Just was it overtraining? Was it nutrition?
I think it's a structural thing with me. That was my second stress fracture in 11 months, different areas, and I just think I'm prone to stress fractures. So not much I can do. I wasn't doing a ton of mileage. I hadn't really changed surfaces. I hadn't changed shoes. You know, I wasn't doing anything unusual. It just happened.
Now, do they recommend anything different with your diet when you come up with that? Do they tell you to take some, you know, calcium tablets or something?
Well, I've had bone density testing done and calcium absorption, and everything seems okay. So really doesn't seem like that's my problem.
Yeah, that's tough. It's tough to take that time off.
Definitely.
Tough to get back. Well, I always, people ask me what trail races to run. I always recommend the New England ATF Mountain Series. But it's not your, it's going to be tough for you to jump up to that from your weekend 5K to that, because some of those races are fairly rigorous.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it.
Like that 2 years ago when we did Cranmore. That was nuts.
Yep.
So that's interesting. What do you plan this year? First of all, tell us what your blog is. Anything else you want people to come and find?
Sure. People are welcome to come take a look at my blog anytime. It's Double D Mountain Runner at blogspot.com.
And yeah, I think that's what it is.
If you do just Double D Mountain blog and a Google search, you'll get me.
Yeah, and like you said, you're kind of nuts about the numbers, right? So you know how many miles you've run per year in your life, and you know how many mountains you've been on top of.
I keep all kinds of spreadsheets.
Yeah, can you give me some of the highlights of that, of the Dave Dunham
Over 106,000 miles, closing on 800 injuries. I've actually just last weekend I did a little road trip and picked up a couple of state high points, and now I've been to the highest point in 20 states, and I've been to 80 different county high points, running every town in Massachusetts. 1 year I ran on every street in the town I was living in, Londonderry, New Hampshire, in the year, that one given year. I don't know. That's pretty much the short of it.
Well, I saw one where you were counting peaks bagged or something.
Yeah, I have that, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how many.
But it was somewhere around 400 or 500, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And I've raced like almost 1,100 times now.
Yeah, and you, at one point you held the Mount Washington Road Race record, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, about 20-something years ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
So, based on your fame in Runner's World, have you gotten a lot of calls from Hollywood, you know?
Well, you know, no more than I had gotten before.
The movie offer?
Nothing more than I had gotten in the past.
So what are you going to do for the for your spring campaign when you're all healed up? What are your plans?
Actually looking towards the winter, snowshoe season.
Oh, that's right. You're a big snowshoer.
Yep, and we have national championships are going to be in the east this year outside of Syracuse. So hopefully getting our team together and having a good year of snowshoe racing.
So I've never done competitive snowshoe racing. What's the difference between that and a normal trail race?
Well, you don't have to really worry about your footing. No roots, no rocks. So that's nice. But the different types of snow can make it really difficult. There are some races where you'll be totally maxed out running 12-minute miles.
Right, right. With the heavy wet snow.
Mm-hmm. It's a heck of a lot of fun. You get to some different locations that you might not go to.
Yeah, it's pretty too. This part of the country in the middle of the winter, it's just gorgeous when there's a fresh snow cover. It's really nice. So when you get your snowshoeing here, this must be like mountain biking where you know, if you wanted to, you could buy a $5,000 pair of snowshoes, right?
I don't think they get quite that expensive, but yeah, you can get some fancy stuff, you know. But there's a great local company, Dion Snowshoes. They're in Vermont, and they make some great snowshoes.
Yeah. All right. So any other races you want to tell people about to go visit?
Merrimack River Trail Race. I co-direct that. It's in Andover, Mass. In March. It's a great race.
That's a 10-miler, right?
Yep, that's right.
Yep.
And
sometimes there's some mud fun there, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, sometimes there's quite a bit.
Yeah. Good. We love the mud.
Exactly.
it's been fun talking with you.
All right.
I'll let you go. Get back to looking over my tax returns.
You bet.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
All right, I got to record this while it's fresh in my head. So I keep forgetting. Sorry about that. Sucked up a bug. I'm sort of power walking up the side of the ridge here, so don't mind the heavy breathing. But, I've been doing a lot of track work the last couple of weeks. So I'm trying to get some of my speed back. Well, I never had any speed. It's a relative term. But trying to get so I can run faster. Specifically for the Marine Corps Marathon, which I got on October 25th. But what happened is I had no idea what kind of shape I was going to be in as I exited my my mountain biking program for the early summer. I didn't know if I was going to be starting from zero or starting from where when I transitioned back into running. Because basically the last weeks of my mountain biking program, if you look at it, I ran maybe 12, 16 miles a week, and the last week, I think, last couple weeks, maybe 0 miles running. And then when I came back to get ready for Ragnar in 4 weeks, I basically shocked my system. Right? I did that run every day thing. I basically came back, I went 0, 25, 30-something, 50, and then back down to 30, and then into the Ragnar with that. And I felt, I didn't get injured at all. My legs feel outstanding. I mean, I got no injuries. It's just amazing. So, what do we take away from this? One is the conditioning that I built up doing these 4 or 5 hour intense mountain bike rides was almost 100% portable as conditioning to running. So I was in shape. I wasn't in running shape, but I was in shape, and the running came right over. Plus, I believe because of the physical nature of mountain biking, I think my muscular skeletal system was tremendously strong to keep me from getting injured if I was just doing running, because running's so specific, right? So that's one lesson. So I came out of the Ragnar and said, well, you know what? That wasn't, it was hard, but, I was fairly happy with my performance over that 36 miles. And I said, well, I got 6 weeks to train for this marathon. Now, if I look at it, I'm in, week 8, week 9, week 10 of a marathon program shape. Well, if I take it from there, I should be able to race this marathon. That's a flat marathon. So I said I'd put together a little program. So I've been doing some speed work and tempo work down the track, plus throwing a bunch of 20 milers, 20 plus milers, 3 or 4 of those. That's what I got time for. Two or three 20 miler plus, and then a 2 week taper and into Marine Corps. But during those 2-3 weeks, I also can throw in some speed and tempo work to get my pace down. And we talked about this a lot before. Why do you do speed and tempo? You do it to make your legs stronger and get them comfortable with that higher turnover and that different mechanics. But you also do it to get some speed, to move your aerobic barrier. So the point at which you start breathing heavy, to be able to move that, and then to be able to run in that uncomfortable, to make running in that uncomfortable aerobic threshold more comfortable. So you know what it feels like, you're not afraid of it. It doesn't set off all the alarms in your body anymore. You can run in that zone. And plus give you confidence. The mental confidence you get from doing that speed work is tremendous. So I've been doing speed work, and you say, Chris, I'm just a beginning runner. I run 12-minute miles. Why are you talking about this? Because it's applicable no matter what your speed is. I'm doing it twice a week. You can do it once a week. There's speed and there's tempo. And you say, how do I figure out what I should be doing my speed at, what I should be doing my tempo at? And I had to just go through this because I don't use a heart monitor. And I've had to give up some speed over the years. So right now, I'm doing my easy runs. So if I go out running just with the dog, I'm going to run like 8:30s, right? So if you look at that and you try to calculate my tempo from that, just a rule of thumb here, is your tempo is going to be a minute and a half per mile faster than that, than my easy run, right? So if I'm out with the guys, I might be running an 8-minute mile. But so your tempo, you shouldn't be breathing hard. It should be a 7, 7.5 on a scale of 1 to 10. And that you want to do 1600s or longer. So you want to be able to, you're not going to be breathing tremendously hard. It's not going to hurt a lot. You want to practice form, right, and go down the track and do a 1600 at that pace. Do try to work up to a set of 5, maybe a set of 8 if you get a marathon, something like that. If you do that, it's not going to feel comfortable for 3 or 4 weeks. But if you keep doing that once a week, you're going to see some amazing benefits from that in terms of your pace and your ability to race. Now, if you look at speed, speed is taking that, right, that 7-minute mile and cranking another 30 seconds off it. So now I'm actually breathing pretty hard. I'm running at over that 1600, I'm running at about, a 9 out of a 1 to 10. I mean, I'm not coughing up a lung. I used to do these at 6. Then I'd be coughing up a lung. But at a 6:30, I'm working pretty hard, and I'm working my legs pretty hard. And that develops a whole lot of leg strength. And so at that point, you're practicing running within sort of your discomfort zone. So, that's how you can calculate. Take a minute and a half off your casual pace. Do 1600s at that for tempo. Then take a minute and a half. Take another 30 seconds off for your speed pace and do 1600s at that. And just try to listen to your body. And any place in that range, plus or minus 30 seconds, you're going to get tremendous benefit from. So, just go do that. And you can't just do it once. You got to work through a program of a month or two, and you'll feel it. And, in a beginner program, they're not going to have you do any of that stuff. In a medium program, they're going to have you do one of those workouts a week, whether it's a tempo, a speed, or a hill. In an advanced program, which is essentially what I'm doing 3 hard workouts a week, speed on Tuesday, tempo on Thursday, and then the long run on Sunday. And and I'm doing 1600s for a marathon because it's a longer distance. 1600 is much more appropriate, longer, slower because it's a marathon. And I'm doing, I did 3, and I'll work up to 5 on the speed. And in between, you're going to run, you're going to jog a lap. Don't stop dead. Jog a lap in between, and then take a 2 or 3 minute rest until your heart rate comes down. Stretch out a little bit, get some water. And then for the tempo, start at 5, work your way up to 8, 10 if you think you're a superhero. And if you can do that, then and load in your long runs, you're going to be a marathon shape. You're going to PR. So that's, there's no secret to it. All right. Hope that helps. And, like I said, even if you're just a beginner, just try it because it's interesting. I can't think of any other good reason to run on the track. I'd rather be out here in the woods in the dark with the dog. Hear those, I don't know what those are, crickets? Tree frogs. Hear all the tree frogs? All right, I'm running up the ridge now. Chasing the fur boy.
You guys, you lollygag the ball around the empty. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Barry?
Lollygag.
Lollygaggers.
Well, I'll make this quick because we're running out of time today. Just too much great stuff to talk about, eh? Well, I promised I'd share my download numbers, and lately we get around 2,000 downloads a week. Some weeks more, some weeks less. So whoever you 2,000 people are, you can come and find me. Let me know who you are. Friend me on Facebook. It's CYKT Russell, or Twitter, CYKT Russell. That's Chris Yellow King, Tom Russell, 2 S's, 2 L's. And if you're feeling magnanimous, go out to iTunes, go out to the iTunes store, search for Run Run Live, and leave me a review of some sort. Tell a couple friends, the more the merrier. This is your show as much as mine, so send me an email or leave me some audio on the call-in line. Love to hear from you. Love to help with whatever I can, make the community stronger. So, the music tonight is a little bit country. It's called Black Swamp Creek, and it's by a gentleman, and I'm sure he's a fine gentleman, named 8 Ball Aitken. and that's from the PodSafe Music Network. And the parting thought I'll leave you with is that I'm impressed, deeply impressed, with the diversity of people I've been meeting. And diversity, I think, makes the world a stronger and a healthier place. You know, you got to remember, it's the mutations that drive radical and positive breakthroughs. So don't forget to act like a mutant every once in a while. Break out of your box. Show the world your burning, beautiful light. In the words of the old blues standard, let it shine, 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 let it shine. And I'll see you out there.
I don't know, but I've been told down by the banks there is buried gold. Many people go down to try their luck, but not as many ever come back up. If you tell anybody, they say, I don't care what happens in that swamp's gotta stay down there. Up into the town. No use paying for what we've done. Better grab what you can and run, run, run. There was buried gold.
Thanks for listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.